Freddie and the Z-Man.
No.
Right Said Fred and the Amazing Xandero.
No.
Xander Fred. Fred Ziffel and Arnold. Okay, I'm done messing around. This is Fred and Xander on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
It's really amazing how upset you can get when your team is winning their division by 9 games. And you watch a game like last night.
And in person. Don't get me started.
Oh, we got to get you started. That's what you're here for. Three hours of talk about going on up to American Family Field.
Yeah.
Which I'll still call Miller Park, probably.
Well, it's hard.
Times.
It's hard not to.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard not to, I guess. What was the story there? Miller Coors lost interest and because they have new ownership, they don't want to spend the money naming a park anymore.
Think about it. They don't need it.
No, they don't need it. But look, everything changes. But it's cool for the town. But it's not like Miller wasn't represented. Everybody had Miller Light in their hand.
Right, they're all drinking.
Or of course.
Yeah,
it's sure. All the same now.
It's all the same. Yeah. So the White Sox go up to Milwaukee. You get great pitchers' duels. I was watching the pregame show on NBC Sports Chicago. They said it's the first time the five all-star starting pitchers went to pitch in a series. You have Lynn and Rodon for the White Sox, and you have Peralta, Burns, and Woodruff for the Brewers.
Yeah, Peralta looked pretty good.
He looked really good, and he only went 4 innings, and he only threw 51 pitches.
Now, did they say on the broadcast why that was, did they explain that? Because it kind of seemed odd that they pulled him.
I know that people will be shocked, but I did listen to the NBC Sports Chicago broadcast yesterday, and Stone and Benetti were saying that they pulled him because they didn't intend for him to go long because he's had a higher amount of innings already this year. But I also saw that he was scheduled to bat in the bottom of the fourth inning. And when he came to the plate, or was going to come to the plate, they had the bases loaded. So I'm not 100% sure they pulled him. I don't know if they announced this beforehand, that he was going to be a short inning guy. So I'm not sure.
Well, it sounds like we have our answer, right?
Well, you would think. I thought they pulled him because he was scheduled to come to the plate in the inning.
Well, maybe it's a little bit of both.
Yeah. So maybe they said, listen, if he comes to the plate, or if Taylor makes, hits into a double play or something like that, we'll send him out there for
another
the fifth.
Good reason for DH on the NLC.
Oh, my God. What a joke. It's so ridiculous. Rob Manfred, when he throws out that competitive balance crap, when you got an American League team that goes to a National League park and they got to put their pitcher up.
And Giolito all of a sudden has to bat?
Yeah. It's so ridiculous. And everybody says, well, you know, if pitchers weren't batting, we wouldn't have got Mark Burley's homer up at Miller Park.
We wouldn't
cares?
Have Shohei.
Shohei Ohtani. Well, you would,
Shohei
though.
Ohtani. Yeah.
But
I'm just abbreviating. It's just Shohei.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all one word.
The whole thing's a joke because, again, for decades, I've said, I don't care if you DH or don't DH. But
just make it even.
It's got to be the same. It's got to be universal.
If you're going to play each other.
Yeah.
Which, and how long have we been doing the interleague? It's been quite a while.
Yeah.
Long enough to realize the difference in how uneven things are and just to make it across the board. And if we're going to make these rule changes, why is that not an obvious one?
Yeah. Oh, it is the most obvious.
Well, it is, but it isn't to the people that it matters.
Well, because they're idiots.
Let's be honest. Then there's that.
The people that think that the designated hitter in the American League with no DH in the National League during interleague play is a good thing are idiots.
It doesn't make any sense. I mean, show me a point. What is the argument? I don't think I've ever heard a compelling argument for it.
I don't know that there can be one. If anybody's got one, 312-332-3776.
Beyond, that's the way we've always done it. I don't want to hear that.
But you can't. That's fine. But you can't do it. It's bad enough in the regular season. Imagine if last night was game one of the World Series. And the White Sox got Giolito at the plate with guys on base both times he comes up.
Right.
That's crap.
Right.
And everybody says, well, the National League does it. The National League is batted. Every time Kyle Hendricks pitches, he hits.
Right. Which means the more you do it, the better you get.
Exactly.
Theoretically.
Yeah. So every single time he sacrifices bunts, take
batting practice.
Sure they do. Yeah.
There's no reason for Giolito, maybe on a day where he has the bat, but that's not going to change anything.
No, they do it a week or so before they take BP because they don't want to waste BP time on a pitcher who's not going to hit.
Right.
You know, he's not going to hit for a month and a half. So why waste your time on it? Where Hendricks knows he's going to hit every start.
Now, does Rob Manfred control the parking situation up in Milwaukee?
Was it bad?
I'm pretty sure he doesn't.
Is it bad? There aren't a lot of entrances, right?
Oh, my God. Seriously.
First of all, the question's got to be, how early did you get there?
I didn't get there early enough.
Okay, well, that's...
But I could tell you, had I gotten there a half hour earlier, I still would have been stuck in 45-minute... traffic getting into the parking lot.
Okay.
It's get off the highway on Brewer's Way. Then you make this turn into an industrial park. I'm not even kidding. A left turn. Then it curves around to the right. And there literally are, parking lot attendants, security, whatever. They're literally letting one car go at a time.
At American Family Field.
Yeah, and then when you get in the parking lot, it's one at a time. Where you go to guaranteed rate, you have four or five lines.
Yeah.
Everybody's taking money, quick, bam, go. You have one person, and they're alternating. There are four lanes of traffic. It's one at a time. You wait, everybody wait. And it's almost like they're waiting 2 minutes, like they have a two-minute rule. It is the most ridiculous thing.
I was there when the Cubs played in Milwaukee earlier in the season, back when capacities, I can't remember what the exact percentage they had at the time. It was maybe
30%-ish.
Yeah. And it was still awful getting in and out of there.
And they had maybe 60, 70% of that stadium full.
Last night, 32,000. Okay. 32,714 was what they announced. Right.
So, yes, I did get there too late.
Yeah.
And I've never been there before, so I got to a parking section early, but I didn't realize that there's like one road leads to reserve parking and the other one is general parking.
Right.
It's a lesson. You go to a new stadium, you got to get there early.
Got to get there early. Yeah.
But 45 minutes waiting in that line was just absolutely ridiculous, especially seeing how they operate. So I say to you, Milwaukee, I love you. But seriously, you've got a baseball team. Act like a major market and actually get some people working. There are a lot of people out of work. Get the people working.
Yeah, people don't want to work, though. They make more unemployment. So when Casper or Jason Benetti say, for those keeping score at home, and I'm holding on my score sheet on Twitch, I was keeping score at home.
You are. Can you read your own writing, though?
Yeah, I can read all of it. Yeah, okay. Every single thing, because I take notes. Like, why is Tim Anderson swinging at the first pitch and bouncing out with men at first and third? You got a guy at third base. Would you hit the ball in the outfield? That's all you got to do. Jose Abreu is really good at when there's a guy in third, he doesn't care about getting a hit. He hits the ball so the runner at third can score.
Yes. And look, Anderson has been doing that. And then all of a sudden for him not to, I mean, he's been going opposite way. He's been taking the ball.
He goes opposite way a lot. And so the thing I saw online last night, it might have been Chris Kamka, who does all the stats for NBC Sports Chicago. He says Tim Anderson, and if it's not him, he gets credit for it anyway. Tim Anderson and Trey Turner share the record for the fewest sacrifice flies since 2016. Okay?
Wow.
That's 5 years. They've got nine.
That's pretty ridiculous.
Nine. Now, I know you're a leadoff guy. You don't come up all that many times, maybe, with guys on base, okay? But you got to be prepared when you do. And, you know, Jose Abreu is great at it. Jose Abreu is really good at it. To be honest, yesterday, Jose Abreu and Tim Anderson and Yoan Moncada weren't good at anything. Okay, they went 0-for. Okay, 0-for-4 for Anderson, 0-for-3 for Abreu with a walk with two strikeouts. Moncada 0-for-4 with a pop up to the pitcher in foul territory, which almost got the pitcher killed. Two strikeouts.
That was ridiculous.
Then in the eighth inning, after Abreu strikes out, Moncada hits a shot just to the left of second base. The third baseman is there because of the way they shifted.
Yep.
Moncada's walking to first base. He gets thrown out by about two or three strides.
Yeah, he wasn't moving quick.
Next guy up was Andrew Vaughn, who homers. If I'm Tony La Russa, or if I'm whatever the heck their bench coach's name is, I say, hey, Yoan, once you might want to run a little bit. just jog a little bit, maybe, to first base. That would be a nice thing to see.
Yeah.
Oh, my Lord.
And I have a problem.
They're up by 9 games in their division. But
right.
They're playing a good team.
However, you can't collapse like that.
No.
And that was a collapse. And it almost seems like a pattern that when we play good teams, the first game, we're just like kind of caught unaware, like what?
What just happened? Like Houston last weekend. Yeah.
And then all of a sudden we go, oh, yeah. We have to kick it into gear.
It's going to be hard today, to kick it in.
Well, hopefully today.
Against Corbin Burns and then Brandon Woodruff in the next 2 days.
I have a problem with the Zach Collins play, too. Now, I know what you had said. We were talking off air about this.
That was in the seventh inning.
Yeah, that, you know, he was probably told you got to go in contact. But you know what? That was hit right to the third baseman. He could have stopped himself. The third baseman would have checked him and then thrown to first.
Yeah.
That's the way I feel. And I say it was right in front of me. And it was like, what is going on?
Yeah. But if they say contact, as soon as the ball's hit, you got to go. So, and if you don't, then they yell mad at you.
Well,
they send you down to the minors. Like you're mean Mercedes.
I'd rather have Zach get yelled at for checking himself and not going on that and staying on third.
Let's go on out to Evanston and John. John, what's going on today?
Hey, John.
Hey, guys. You know, last night, the eighth inning, there was some real fireworks going on in that White Sox dugout. And I'm wondering if that second base umpire had said something to Anderson or the home plate umpire, because normally when you get tossed out of the game, you don't go nuts like that. Somebody had to have said something to Anderson because he was lit up. And I have never seen him try to get over teammates to get at an umpire.
Neither have I. That was wild. And I look forward to figuring out what that was. Did we get any comments from him?
No.
After the game?
Yeah. John, appreciate the
call.
Thank
you, John.
We didn't. For those who missed it.
Mostly fastballs and sliders for Strickland. And we've got another ejection from the White Sox dugout.
Either Jerry Nerin or Miguel Cairo.
And now,
Tim Anderson's out there now.
Tim Anderson actually out on the warning track in front of the dugout, so he may have been the one kicked out.
Well, Tim does not need to continue with that only because it leads to a suspension. You get tossed from a game, okay. But when you start really getting into the face of the umpires, it becomes a little bit more.
Yeah, he's got a couple teammates now trying to get him back in the dugout. Shelly Duncan, Jerry Nerin, and it definitely was Tim because he's now giving John Lipka an earful and letting Dan Iasonia hear about it as well, the crew chief.
Yeah, Len Casper and Darren Jackson on the call right here on ESPN 1000 last night, and he was unbelievably upset. And, you know, there were some questionable calls, but you can't be Aaron Bummer and walk two guys on 8 pitches. And that's what he did when he came in.
No. You know, coming up to the trade deadline, we've been talking about second base. Every day that goes by, especially days like yesterday, it's middle relief.
Yeah.
Relief.
Yeah. And we got none of it last night. So let's go to out to the roads and Frank. You're on ESPN 1000. Hey, Frank.
Hey, Frank.
Good morning, guys. Great show as usual.
Thanks.
And listen, here's my problem. And I love Tony La Russa. I think he's made some suspect moves. But on the whole, all the injuries, like Mike North was saying, he's supposed to be sleeping in the dugout. They're 20 games over 500. Here's my beef with them. And it's happened 7 times since I watched this team day and night. Giolito, no matter how many pitches he has, he doesn't start the seventh inning of a game unless it was in the Houston game when he was a complete command. Now, I understand the pitchers. I came from a different era. They're not going to pitch him that much. But on 6 occasions, Giolito left the game with a lead after pitching 6, and the Sox blew 4 or 5 of them. Last night, the game was still in hand, even though they weren't hitting. Anything could happen. And the bullpen implodes again. I don't know why Tony won't let this guy pitch into the seventh inning. I'd like your answer. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Frank.
Thanks. What was it? Do we know what his pitch count was?
Yeah, he had 91. He had 91 pitches in that inning, and he did have a tough sixth inning. He had a fly out to start it, then a line drive, a rocket actually hit to Moncada right in front of where you were.
Right.
Then Tellez hit a double, intentional walk to the pitcher, and then they struck. He struck out Jackie Bradley Jr.
I'm with Frank. Let him start the seventh.
I'm sorry.
Up right away and let him start the seventh.
Yeah, it was here. Well, see, so many times they want to start these relievers with a fresh inning. They don't like bringing guys in and all that kind of stuff. But if Giolito could have gone,
well,
and
if we don't have the middle relief, we have to do that.
Yeah.
If we have want to have a chance to win a game.
Yeah. And Frank brings up a great point. We'll keep an eye on that as we go through the second half. Giolito now 8-7 with a .378 earned run average. White Sox now 19 above .500, 58-39. We'll talk more White Sox baseball. We come back at 9:30. We're going to talk a little bit of college football. I know you're saying, hey, this isn't Black and Abdallah. This isn't Jay Hood. Why are we talking college football? Because there's something that's going on in college football which is going to change the way college football is for the rest of...
literally a huge game changer.
For the rest of the future. We'll do that at 9:30 with Adam Rittenberg from ESPN 1000. We'll get back to your calls after this on ESPN 1000.
This is Fred and Xander on ESPN 1000. Also available on demand on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
If you're heading on up to Milwaukee today, and I know some people probably
leave now.
Yeah, leave right now to get into those parking lots. Be sure to stop by the Mars Cheese Castle today from 2 until 4. See Adam Abdallah. That's right, our guy. Come hang out, and you'll also have a chance to win tickets for tonight's White Sox game up in Milwaukee. That's Abdallah from 2 until 4, the Mars Cheese Castle. Stop on up there.
Right off of 94.
Oh, there's nothing better than getting a big hunk of cheese and having it for you and bring it home. And oh, it's a great place.
They have fantastic brats, too.
Yeah, yep. Mm-hmm. It's great. It's great.
If you're in the state of Wisconsin and your brats suck,
you
need
wrong.
To leave.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's on you at that point.
There's a lot of places. Let's go on out to Lincolnwood and Kevin. Kevin, talking White Sox baseball. What's going on?
Hey, Kevin.
Hey, good morning, guys. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me on.
What's up?
So just wanted to talk a little. You mentioned the collapse last night. I mean, I was watching it. And, I was talking to my brothers right after that. One of the things that I've been talking about a lot, and I know I've been listening to shows all the last few weeks about this. Trade deadline's coming up. A lot of people keep saying we need to fill the second baseman hole. Yes, it's a hole that needs to be fixed, but honestly, I think in the stretch run and once you get into the playoffs, that middle relief has got to be fixed. And, Bummer comes in, doesn't know how to finish batters off anymore, goes 0-2 on the first guy, loses him. Proceeds to throw 10 straight balls and then finally gets a guy out. Fur walks the next guy on 4 pitches, and we all know how the rest of the inning played out.
Yep.
And, it's just Kopech can't pitch every night. He's the only reliable middle reliever we got.
Right.
And, we need to bridge that gap from starter to closer. We got awesome starters. Got one of the best closers in baseball, but if we can't get him there, and we've lost too many games like this, we're not going to last too long once we get to the playoffs.
Yeah.
I think if Rickon does anything, he's got to get a reliable middle reliever.
Yeah, yeah. Kevin, that's what we were talking
Kevin,
about.
Thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you. He brings up a good point. If Tony's not going to let Giolito get deeper into the game.
Right.
There is no bridge to Hendricks.
Well, think about the guys that they've had in the past that were good. Marshall, Foster, Bummer, Burr, not bad. Okay.
Hoyer was better than
Hoyer.
He was this
year. So there's
year.
Five guys.
And the thing is, they were better.
And there's five guys in now. They're not good.
And they were better.
Yeah.
He said Bummer can't anymore.
Yeah.
There was a time he was dominant. So he had every reason to believe entering this season that we had a good relief staff.
Yeah.
It's not working out.
No, he walked Adames and Yelich on 8 pitches. He threw 4 straight balls to both of them after he gave up a little bloop single to Wong. So he loaded the bases. He got a ground out, run scored, a strikeout, then another walk. And, well, that's when Burr came in.
If Han doesn't do anything about relief, we're going to get the big bats back at some point. I guess the theory would be we just better score more runs than them.
Yeah, there's that possibility. As a matter of fact, you might get Eloy back quickly because his 20-day maximum stay for his minor league rehab stint runs out Wednesday. Robert just started his this week, so we'll see exactly how long that goes and what they're going to do and who they're going to send down. Let's go to Bear fan Bob. Bob, we're not talking Bears. What's going on?
Hey, Bob.
Well, I was kind of at that suck fest last night.
Me too.
To what's going on? Yeah, right. In answer to where my seats were, I was behind the White Sox
dugout.
Oh, we lose you, Bob.
We lost Bob.
Yeah, we lost.
Bob, we're gonna put you on hold to see if we can reconnect with you. Let's go to Willowbrook and Owen. Owen, what's happening?
Hey there.
Hey, guys, you know, 3 points about the game last night. And I think what Hahn could be looking at, they got such a comfortable lead. And letting Giolito go, go to over 100 pitches, maybe if it's a closer race, or maybe if it's a team they're going to contend with, maybe he goes into the seventh. But I actually think Hahn's looking at the fact they probably will go to a four-man rotation in the playoffs, and you'll probably see Cease go to the bullpen.
Sure.
And I think that's one of the things he might be looking at. The other thing is, if the Sox aren't playing a contender like Milwaukee, I don't think they get as emotional over the game as they would if that happened against Minnesota. When you got a 9-game lead against a team that's not competing, but they might be looking at Milwaukee if they get to the World Series. And then last but not least, I think Anderson's frustration, he might have been upset with the game, but if you look, he's had 3 terrible at-bats with men on third.
Yep.
Score position last night was bad, and then he struck out with a man on third, and then on a 3-0 count in a game against Minnesota, he pops up to the first baseman, and I think it's more Anderson being frustrated with guys in scoring position than maybe that game last night. So those are some points I just wanted to bring up, but I really think they're going to go to a 4-man rotation, and I don't think Hahn's going to panic and maybe try to, you know, deal something real, unless he gets a real bargain on a middle relief guy.
Yeah. I agree with you a lot. Cease will probably be the bullpen guy. You'll probably go with the other 4 starting.
It makes a lot of sense. And look, as baseball fans, whatever our team is, we want them to go out and get it every day.
Right.
But in the background, what Owen brought up is like, okay, you know what? We're so many games up. You know what? La Russa's not going to burn through Giolito. It's
right.
Not a tight race. You know, all of these things that we don't consider because we're fans and we just want our team to step on the other team's neck each and every day.
Yeah, the one thing about this whole thing, I mean, is last week they lose the first game, as you had mentioned, to Houston. Then they come back and they win the next 2 with great pitching outings. Absolutely
right, and that first game against
outings.
Houston was almost like, what?
Yeah.
What? Like they were half asleep.
Yeah.
Same thing last night.
And talk about emotion. Lucas Giolito, who did go those 6 innings, talked about the emotions of the game.
Frustrations got high with the way the game was being called against us. I got frustrated a couple times. I just tried not to show it out there. And sometimes it just kind of hits that breaking point, and it hit that breaking point for Tony and Timmy. And it's just how it goes sometimes. You know, we play with a lot of emotion on this team. We come out, put our heart and soul in it. And when we feel like we're getting things taken away from us, it's not going to make us feel good.
Yeah, and they didn't feel good last night. The one thing about Owen's call that I'm not sure about, because Tony La Russa is always about winning that game that day. And, you know, maybe he's saying, listen, we know where Giolito's at. He's pitching a lot of innings. Let's get him out. But Tony's really big on winning today's game.
That's what we've always been led to believe.
Always. When he was back here in the 80s, he was like that.
But
it's all about winning today's game.
But I get what Owen's saying.
Yeah.
You know, those are those considerations that are not totally obvious to the ordinary fan.
Yeah. Like I said, the organization can't get that upset with a loss last night when they have a 9-game lead over Cleveland.
Right.
Okay?
Right. Because, in the bigger scope of things, it doesn't really, really matter.
We go halfway up, or maybe more than halfway up, to Milwaukee and Gurnee. It's James. Hey, James.
Hey, James.
What's cracking, boys? Freddie, how's it going, man? Haven't
going
talked
well.
To you in a while.
And what's up?
Owen kind of took my thunder. Not so much, but I think he's right. But I've been thinking maybe a 3-man rotation, maybe 3.5 to 4, right? Come playoffs, depending on how that series plays out. But having said that, I think that middle reliever, even though we have 9 games, I know it's comfortable. And you just never know in baseball, man. Cleveland, you just never know. I mean, I don't think they're ever really going to push you to to tying it up, but they could make a little run. So my point is maybe getting that middle reliever for the rest of the regular season is what may come in, because you got Keiko, you got all five of them. It could only be, who even knows, Keiko might be throwing the ball better than Giolito when it comes towards the end of the year, so maybe Giolito's that and Cease or any combination of the sort. So I really think Rick's going to need to go get somebody for the rest of the regular season to kind of shore up, like Owen had said. Now, don't spend too much, but if it's the right arm and you got to give up a little bit, that might just solidify to stay comfortable. So you don't have to press on your middle relievers too much, too. So that's what I think, man. I think it's going to be a three-man rotation, maybe even four at some points. Again, it all depends on how far the series go.
Yeah.
So that's all I...
Thanks, James.
Thanks, James.
The one part, as he was talking, I'm sitting here thinking, if you go to a four-man rotation, and which they probably will in the playoffs, mm-hmm. okay, and say you have Giolito, Lynn, Rodon, and Keuchel. I'm not saying, you know, whatever order you're going to have them in. Your bullpen then consists of Dylan Cease, Kopech. Michael Kopech, Garrett Crochet, Liam Hendricks. That's four guys. So you really need one or two other guys because you never know how the playoffs are going to go. And especially the way they pull starters and everything else when they get to the postseason and things like that, you need a couple guys that are pitching well at that time. You'll have four guys. Because, like I said, with Cease, and plus, if you bring Cease in for an inning or two, you have to shut him down for two or three days now because he's not used to doing that. Getting a lot of the work.
Right,
like that.
And that's a real good point. I mean, the best situation would be for a couple of these guys to come around and find their game like they showed us last year.
Yeah.
Now, is Fry's up? He's off the IL, send him back?
He's bad. They sent him down.
Wait
till Jace Fry comes back. Why? last night, I tweeted it out. The most disappointing thing last night was when Aaron Bummer was in, and he had already walked a guy, and Steve Stone said, well, there's nobody up in the bullpen, so this is all on Aaron Bummer. It's like, oh, my God. I wanted to turn it off at that point. There was no reason to watch anymore.
Right.
He was brutal. Let's talk some college football just for a little bit because there's things going on in college football that are going to change the way the game is played, at least I think it is, and probably the way you're going to watch it and who you're going to watch. We'll talk about that when we come back. Adam Rittenberg from ESPN.com will join us here on ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000. Now back to more Fred and Xander on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
So people that listen to ESPN 1000, and we appreciate all of you.
Every single one of you.
And hopefully we can reconnect with Bear Fed Bob sometime. I don't talk a lot of college football. I leave that up to guys that know college football. I leave that up to guys like Black and Abdallah.
They're pretty feverish.
They love the game. Yep. They're here on Saturdays during the season. I'm sure they'll be here again this season. Maybe not. They work during the week, so we'll see. But
during their shows, they talk college football.
Yeah, college football. They love college football. And so does our next guy, Adam Rittenberg from ESPN.com. Adam, how are you today?
Hi, Adam.
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on.
You know, I've always thought, and I was always the guy on the island by himself. I'm the old 64-year-old guy. You can't pay the kids. They're getting a free
Get
education.
Get off my grass.
Yeah, but the name, image, and likeness was something I thought made sense. But the more I look into it, could this be like one of the most awful things to happen to the sport of college football?
Well, I think it's too soon to tell, Fred. It's obviously only weeks into it. And, you know, I talked to a bunch of players about it at Big Ten Media Days the last 2 days in Indianapolis. And I think players are at different stages. There are some that were very prepared for this to start and have already, you know, entered some pretty good agreements. Others are, you know, kind of waiting and seeing how it unfolds. And others are like, you know, I know that to make some real money, I have to focus on making plays on the field and helping myself there and not worrying so much about it. So yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see how kind of the tiers or categories in which players engage with NIL. But it also is undoubtedly a factor in recruiting, and it's going to continue to be something that is talked about really in all elements of the sport. But I do think that the opportunity to make some money off of who you are and your brand can be a good thing, but it's obviously going to be difficult to regulate and it's going to be all over the map depending on the school, depending on the player, and depending on the market that they're in.
See, that's the problem. It is going to be all over the map, and it's not going to be an equitable situation across the board. What's the difference now when this really blows up between college football and pro football?
Well, you know, the difference, you know, I guess in theory is that they're not getting any direct money from the schools other than, at least legal money from the schools other than their scholarships and their and some of the stipends that they get from their universities. And just like any other college student, you know, you can be an entrepreneur. College students do make money. They do have businesses. They do have brands. And that happens outside of college athletics. So, you know, there's an argument to say, what's the difference with it happening inside college athletics, because these guys do have major profiles in some cases. Certainly, you know, players like Trevor Lawrence and Tua Tagovailoa and even Justin Fields now with the Bears. I was talking with Ryan Day, the Ohio State head coach, about what Justin could have commanded from an NIL standpoint while he was at Ohio State, and whoever the replacement for Justin Fields is this fall for the Buckeyes, he's going to have a tremendous platform if he chooses to engage with that. So, you know, again, I understand the concerns. I think there's some other concerns in college sports right now, especially with realignment likely coming again. But it's just going to be something to monitor here. And I also think, guys, it could be very different in 2 to 3 years than in year one, because this is the first time around. There's a lot of discussion about it. There are a lot of businesses that are engaging. You know, there's one in Miami that's pledging $6,000 per player. Again, I don't know what type of ROI you get on that for that business, other than to say that you're very, very close to Miami Hurricane football. But those patterns are going to change over time. So that's why I think it's important for everyone to just monitor this and study it and see where we're at in a few years.
Adam Rittenberg of ESPN.com joining us here. You did, it was a great article with your talk with Ryan Day talking about the NIL money. Because I'm thinking, if I'm a left tackle and my quarterback's making $1 million, why am I going to block for him if I'm getting 10 grand or a car and nothing else? I mean, like, I need more. And you're going to see this, I would think, from a lot of guys. I mean, you know, I'm the safety. I'm a shutdown safety. But that's not nearly going to make the kind of money that a running back's going to make.
This is what I mean about equitable across
the
board.
Yeah.
Sure, I guess, but you know, you guys have both heard from athletes just like I have that they know in the locker room who the star players are,
right?
And obviously, in the NFL, everybody is getting something, and so that's the question. I think that was Ryan's point, especially at a school like Ohio State. Now they're not allowed to do what he said yet, but they could be in the near future. And his plan is basically, hey, we're Ohio State, we're in Columbus, the Buckeye football is all anyone cares about. Let's create basically a pool of money. We'll pool some businesses. We'll pool some money, and then we'll divide that among the team instead of individually. And then if you're Justin Fields and you're the quarterback and you still want to create a agreement with whatever outlet, you can do that. But at least everybody's getting something. Now that's not going to be the case at every school. Ohio State's in a very unique and elite situation. But it was interesting to hear that could be the next round of this as this, again, evolves over time.
You know, I like to check every year or so. How many teams are in the Big Ten, really?
Yeah, 14 right now. We'll see how long that remains.
And the Big 12 about to lose two, it appears, with Oklahoma and Texas wanting to go to the SEC. What's that going to do for these other conferences who are going to lose, you know, key marquee schools? You know, is it going to get to the point where there's 5-6 conferences and that's it, and the rest of the people are playing like intramurals?
It certainly could. I was talking with a Big Ten athletic director about that the other day, about how, you know, the schools that have the same makeups and values might end up just in a pool of on their own with maybe 2 or 3 conferences, or maybe 4 at the most. And so I think it's going to be really interesting to watch. Certainly, what the Big 12 does as it moves from 10 members to 8 members and losing its top 2 brands in Texas and Oklahoma, and then a league like the American, which, you know, has a lot of overlap in terms of territory with the Big 12. Does the Big 12 add schools like Cincinnati and Houston and Memphis, or does the American say, hey, Big 12, you're falling apart, why don't these schools come to our league? and will enhance our television contract. Meanwhile, you have the ACC that's trying to redo its television deal, which is locked in for a very, very long time, but isn't bringing in the type of revenue that the Big Ten and the SEC are. And then it'll be fascinating to see what the Big Ten, if the Big Ten does anything, if the Pac-12 does anything. The one thing to remember with especially the Big Ten and the Pac-12 is that there's only a small group of schools that I think those groups of presidents would admit. The SEC doesn't have that type of restriction in terms of its culture. I think the ACC has somewhat of that restriction, but in the Big Ten, if people are throwing out schools on my Twitter mentions, that it just would never fit in the Big Ten. The Big Ten's never adding West Virginia. I'm very sorry.
Right.
The Big Ten is not going to add schools that don't bring in any value. So that's important to keep in mind as we enter, you know, yet another round of realignment.
But didn't it surprise, I mean, it surprised me, but didn't it surprise you when they brought in Maryland and Rutgers?
Well, again, Fred, they did that because of, at the time, the whole goal was cable markets and cable subscribers.
Okay. You're right.
And now it's changed. I mean, we know what the cable business is like, and it's affected people. And you know, now it's more about, you know, streaming agreements and more creative media agreements. But the Big Ten added Maryland and Rutgers largely to have a presence from a television standpoint, a linear television standpoint on the East Coast. That's not as relevant as it was when the league brought those two members into the conference.
That's why we get Adam on, because he knows what the hell he's talking about,
yeah,
unlike me. Right. I just complain a lot, you know. The one thing you mentioned, though, about conferences like the American Conference and that, what's going to be the enticement for these schools to play well? I mean, because with the way things are going to happen, they're not going to end up playing in you know, year-end tournaments. Are they going to have to start a separate year-end tournament for the lower division conferences?
Well, right now, that's the other thing. There's so much going on in college sports right now. The other thing that's happening is this idea of an expanded playoff. And the proposal that was on the tape, that was brought out in recent weeks, of a 12-team model that would include six automatic spots for the top six conference champions, which in many years includes the champion of the AAC. So,
okay,
you know, that gives them access if that model gets approved like never before. Now, the interesting part of this, you know, not to get too inside baseball, but, you know, two of the commissioners that put that model together are SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey and Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlsby. Now, did Greg Sankey know all along that he was about to poach the two biggest teams from Bob Bowlsby's league, and meanwhile, you know, creating a 12-team playoff so the SEC could maybe get six or seven teams in 1 year? Now, the fact that that's going to about to happen, seemingly, does that change the conversation? And do leagues now say, hey, you only did this and advocated for a 12-team playoff because you were about to add Texas and Oklahoma? We're not on board with that anymore. We're going to go with something a little bit more modest, a 6-team, an 8-team, or maybe even stick with 4. So that's another layer of this. Does this 12-team proposal, which again would grant more access to a league like the American, it would essentially secure a spot for the Pac-12 champion in most years, does that conversation change in light of the Texas and OU news?
Adam, I'll keep reading your stuff because I have no idea how all this stuff's playing out. But a
lot of moving parts.
Yeah, you explained it very well. Thanks a lot for jumping on in.
Thanks, Adam.
All right, thanks, fellas. Appreciate you.
Adam Rittenberg, you'll hear him a lot with Black and Abdallah and with Jay Hood throughout the course of the year. He knows his stuff, follows the Big Ten with 14 teams and the Big 12 with 8. And, geez, unbelievable. It's like, could you change your name? Every year you could be changing your name, getting new logos.
It's awfully confusing. Always has been. And the more I think about it, the European soccer model for college football here. A lower level, upper level.
You play better,
you go to the upper level.
You could do that. There's a possibility.
Two conferences, soccer, one minor, one major.
Soccer in this country won't even do that, so it's amazing if college football did. 312-332-3776. You have any comments or questions on that? We'll get back to a baseball talk. The Cubs won a game. I knew coming out of the break the Cubs had the Arizona Diamondbacks for 6 out of 10 games.
And that's good.
That's a good
confidence builder.
It's a very good confidence builder. 312-332-3776. You're on the ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Instagram at ESPN_Chicago. Now, back to more Fred and Xander on ESPN 1000.
We're talking a lot of college football, and fantasy football is huge. And the 16th Fantasy Football Championship presented by Miller Lite takes place coming up Saturday, August 21st at 115 Bourbon Street here on ESPN. You can join ESPN 1000 for the Fantasy Football Event of the Year. Special guests include Field Yates, ESPN Fantasy expert, also gambling advice from my guy, Mike North, and Carmen DeFalco. A live fantasy football draft preseason viewing party of the Bears. They're on that day at 12 noon. Tickets are on sale now. At 8 o'clock, well, we're past 8 o'clock, and this is an old one anyway, ESPNChicagoFFC.com. Yeah, tickets on sale now, ESPNChicagoFFC.com. They're $20 a piece. ESPN 1000 Fantasy Football Convention starting at 8 a.m. on August 21st, sponsored by PropSwap, Hooters, Bettenhausen Automotive, and 3Chi. That is 3Chi, the upcoming 16th Fantasy Football Championship. I can honestly say that I've never been to one.
I was just going to say, have you ever been to 115 Bourbon Street?
Oh, yeah, I've been there.
Killed some brain cells there?
I know I have. I didn't kill any brain cells. I hosted a show with Steve Michael McMichael there, and we were doing a show in...
You just have water then?
ABC 7. I had sodas, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. ABC 7 came and asked us if the coach was going to get fired, and then we were on TV that night. Talking about the coach and if he was going to get fired. One of those typical bear seasons, you know, when bad things were happening.
Sure.
But I'm always on the air while that is going on. Almost always we're here. So, yeah. So I've not been to any of those. I can always leave here and head out there, but by the time I get there, everything's over.
Yeah, it's a big party. That's going to be a big party. Maybe.
Yeah, they're there from 8 o'clock on.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But it's fun. Get on out there, $20 a ticket, and you can pick them up there. Let's go to my guy out in Vegas, Cullen. Cullen, what's happening?
What's up?
Hey, gentlemen. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Well,
so I am loving all the changes that's happening with college football and college sports in general because these athletes absolutely deserve to be compensated for the work that they at the respective universities, and if it means that crooked organizations like the NCAA, the IOC, FIFA can eventually dissolve and go away, then I am all for it. Because when this happened, the first thing I thought of was Reggie Bush, and you need to give him his Heisman Trophy back. Because what happened to him and Matt Leinart, and the fact that Pete Carroll just got to sneak off to the NFL is ridiculous. I think that's terrible, and it's just... So this is a good change, and I hope they can work all the kinks out because I know there will be a lot of things to work out in the short term. But you know, like I said, I think this is all good.
Cullen, appreciate the call. I've never been for athletes getting paid. I'm sorry. I'm just the guy that says, hey, they're getting an education. They're having a chance to show their
athletes
wares.
Athletes and college athletes.
College athletes. Okay, yeah, college athletes getting paid. The name, image, likeness. Listen, if you want to sell your autograph or you want to sell shirts or something like that, I have no problem with that. But them getting paid directly, it doesn't make any sense to me. Now, the amount of money
that's why it's more like pro football now. All of a sudden, this is going to be. Now, I know it's a different game.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and they're playing for a career in pro football, but it's going to be the same thing with sponsorships and all of this.
But don't make them go to classes. Listen, if Alabama and, you know, any of these schools want to have a football team, fine. Pay guys to play football at your university. They don't have to go to school. They represent the school. They play at the school. They don't go to classes. Do it that way. Don't lie to us and say they're going to classes.
And they're not.
And, you know, and if they don't get to, they have to reach a certain grade. Yeah, right. And you're going to tell me if the quarterback misses a test, he's going to be able to sit out again. No, it doesn't happen.
Not at all.
So, you know, it's the whole thing is, and there are athletes who go to school. And actually go to school to play football and go to school.
And they actually
degree. They earn their degrees.
Right.
And I know many of them, and especially football players who know that their football life is going to be, you know, 4 or 5 years maybe. And they know they want to be able to do something worthwhile after that because they're not all going to make the super huge money.
Right.
You know.
And I get the idea that college football is, benefiting from the likeness and the play of these athletes.
Yeah.
But they are getting paid by a scholarship.
Yeah.
They're getting that's been the model forever.
Forever. Right. And then, you know, and I understand the schools make a lot of money on them. Sure they do. The schools make money. That's what they're a business. They're not just a place of education. They don't let you come in for free.
I would like to see.
But they let those athletes.
I would like to. Yeah, and you know, this is a whole other ball of wax. But I would love to see the schools actually use all of that money that they're making to lower tuition, because I've had my kids are in their 20s.
Yeah.
I paid for my college at Columbia.
Yeah.
It is just insurmountable debt that people are going to college right now.
Well, and the
colleges are making more. I'm talking about the big sports colleges. They're making more than ever.
When I worked with Murph, we talked a lot about this. And basically, you know, the thing they pay for, they're paying for your room and board, okay? They're not paying for your classes. What's throwing an extra chair into a classroom?
You're absolutely right.
They're educating everybody.
And, don't think that room and board is that expensive.
You need 28. And, yeah, well, you've got the buildings built already.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's adding another bed, putting you into a room with a bed with somebody else.
Throwing you some food.
Yeah. And it's not great food.
Well, some of them enjoy it. So we'll get back to your calls, talk some baseball if you want to jump in on the college situation. You want to talk some Cubs. The trade deadline is next Friday. It's the 30th, okay? So next week when we're sitting here, it'll be over. Are the Cubs going to make moves? Are they going to move Bryant or Baez? Javi with a nice 3-run homer yesterday. The White Sox still need some pitching.
Every game seems to be a goodbye.
Yeah, that's what they do. There were a lot of people wearing Bryant jerseys yesterday because they wanted to go and say goodbye to Chris Bryant. Is that going to happen? 312-332-3776. We'll get into Blackhawks, too, because they made a trade. The draft was last night. Lots to get into here on ESPN 1000. Back in 2 minutes.